Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. We did it again, two in the same week. Look how productive we are, Bob.
I'm loving it. I find that I look forward to it. It's not that I didn't when we were doing one a week, but this gets me more in the rhythm of things. You know, it's like we're not hitting the doldrums of mid-season post All-Star game. Now what I feel like we're ramping up to the playoffs.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know? One team is.
All right. So we have a mission today. I like to ask you just before we start, is there anything you want to get to? I never pre-organized the conversations with you, but if there's something important, I'll try to make sure we get it in. And you said you didn't have an opening thought for your show today. So I suggest we start with, let's find Matt an opening thought.
So there's really, and how this works for me is I first go over all the topics. If I don't get inspired, I then go over my guests and I start putting questions together for my guests. And usually by doing that, the brain gets percolating and eventually, you know, you come up with something. So, but I like this one. We can just bounce ideas off of you. You know, the first thing you do is you look what's going on in the news. I feel like a talk show host, like Jay Leno. You heard this, that was a horrible Leno.
Was that actually a Leno?
I went too high. I went like Stewie from Family Guy. But the first thing would be the Masters, where November, the course was easy. And yesterday, it was sort of like Revenge of the Swamp Creature, where everyone except for Justin Rose got killed out there. That's sort of the first place. I'm not really feeling anything as of yet, Masters-wise, but that's the first thing.
Getting excited about the first 2 days of the Masters, it's like getting excited about the first 10 games of baseball.
Yeah.
Everybody you think is better than you thought they were isn't. They're all red shirts, Matt. They're red shirts. Eventually, they will drop off so that the Crooks can take over.
That's a good analogy. That's a perfect analogy. And then you wonder, Justin Rose, is he a red shirt or a Kirk?
Okay, wait. You ready for this? Sorry to interrupt you, Matt, but I got to get this out. You ready?
Do it.
You could do an opening thought on red shirts and green jackets and what the difference is.
Oh, I am putting that down. Red shirts versus green jackets. I like that.
Okay, so that's a contender.
Yeah. That's a good one.
You could also dive in on my controversial take that all public courses should be turned into urban farms.
I've done that one before. I've had that conversation. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, cool. How did it go over? Did you were a commie?
No, because my version of it isn't just about urban farms, which definitely screams I'm a Bernie bro. But I look at how expensive it is to buy property, a condominium or whatever in Toronto. And if you knocked out a couple golf courses and turned them into a mixture of affordable housing, of high-end condos, of things like that, that would help to increase the supply, and it might help with just rent and all that. So, no, I've chatted about that before.
I sent a note on Instagram to super producer at TSN 1050, Aaron Karolnik. He sent a picture of himself out, like, this is me when people say public courses should be closed, and it was kind of a funny picture of him. And I wrote him, I believe that public courses should be turned into urban farms. And he responded 30 minutes later, I believe that you believe that.
Yeah.
Which is me and Aaron in a nutshell.
But see, yeah. Oh, exactly. You're going to have very different views. Also, maybe on this one, I'm just more altruistic about it because the last time I golfed was in 1991. So if golf courses became condos, then that certainly helps. I wouldn't knock them all out, but if you can knock one or two out, then I think that would do some good.
You're suggesting that if it was, we should turn all vineyards into urban farms, you'd be less into it?
Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up right now, Bob. Okay, we got more than enough beets and carrots and celery. And you know what, Bob? These wineries, they are farmers. They employ people of every different age range and economic bracket. You stay away from the wineries.
Yeah, so maybe there's something to it about golf doesn't just sit with you in the same way wine does. Maybe there's something to it. Oh, I got a quick question for you. And I think I've asked you this before, but I'm off of my Lenten fast. I managed to lose almost no weight and be so unhappy doing it. That's almost impossible. I don't know how that happened. But I blame cashew butter. It's like the one thing that my diet allowed me to eat, and I did.
Well, you find that one thing, and you just hit that button over and over again, like hitting refresh when you wanted to buy concert tickets.
Cashew butter, rice cake. Cashew butter, rice cake. Apparently, it cancels the rice cake out. So
that's horrible.
Yeah, it was awful. Speaking of rice-based products, though, I'm looking for a good sake.
I can't help you as much. I did have to take some, we learned about sake, but that was ages ago. And, you know, you get older, the brain is mush, you don't remember as much stuff. I cannot help you with sake. I apologize.
Okay, that's cool. All right, So we've gone through golf. Let me throw out some options for you here. We can dig for a topic for Matt for your opening thought. The Raps, baseball, and the Leafs. Baseball, specifically the Jays. They're all Toronto-centric, where we could start.
Yeah, well, I think actually it coincides with opening thought. Like, my one for the Raptors, and we talked about it last time, is I have no idea how to proper evaluate anyone. Like, they lose to the Bulls last night, and I'm disappointed because Ananobi wasn't great. Malachi Flynn, Gary Trent Jr. weren't great. Those are the guys I want to see do well, even in a losing fashion. But they only had eight players. And the guys who did play well, like Boucher, a lot of those numbers came in the fourth quarter when they were down by 20.
There's an interesting article, I think it was from Blake Murphy on The Athletic today, just about the Raptors in garbage time and how much they faced it this year. I think the league did the Raptors a favor by helping them through suspensions to not field a competitive team. They might have won that game yesterday and convinced themselves that they were close enough to the play-in game that they should just keep going, but they should not. I was excited. I went through one of those draft preview articles yesterday.
Oh no.
Yeah, I've already started. But I was excited when I saw the Raptors come up seventh, and I thought with some more losing, they could be top four. We've got to be realistic here. This is not about trying to get out some Pyrrhic victory. No, no, no. This is about, do we have a shot at a Jalen?
I know. You're right, Bob. You're right. It makes all the sense of the world now. It's just, we haven't been here in ages. We, like, the last time we were here, it was like Obama's first term.
You didn't watch Succession, did you?
I watched a little bit of it, and then it's like anything. If you stop watching a TV show, you blink, a month has passed, and you've moved on.
Okay. So in season two, you wouldn't have seen this then, but there's this scene when two guys are in this super fancy restaurant, and they're having this bird, and apparently it's like a deep-fried bird, and apparently it's illegal. And it's supposed to be so delicious and so succulent that people do this. They put a napkin over their head. And the mythology around it was, it is such a guilty, evil pleasure that you're hiding from God as you do this. That's kind of how I watched yesterday's game, rooting for them to lose.
Okay, first off, they did that in Billions.
Oh, did they?
I don't know who did it first, but...
I think the bird's called an ortolan.
I remember that scene. Is it bad that I was partially curious about how it would taste?
I think it's only natural. I think what's bad is you would do it.
I don't think I could. Like, my worst is still, you know, veal or foie gras.
Well, I don't know, Matt. Like, I've been at a French restaurant with you, and you've eaten horse.
That's true. But
I couldn't do it.
No, I know. And, well, it was the specialty, and, you know, they do it all over Europe. So that was my justification. They do it in Europe.
So that's a classic Matt Cause opening thought. Which is, or maybe even just the question you throw out is, cheering for the Raptors to lose is like your forbidden food. What is your forbidden food?
That's not a bad one. I'm writing that down as well.
Yeah, that's got a real Cause feel tanking. To it. It feels like Dave Damashek would do it. And if Dave Damashek would do it, you would do it.
That is true. I like that. I like that forbidden food one. What's yours? Like, what's your, like, like, to me, yeah. The thing about horse, I didn't really enjoy it. I would never do it again. But veal and foie gras, I would do it 10 minutes from now.
Yeah, I used to eat foie gras, but I don't really like it that much. So it was easy to give it up. I know veal is cruel, so I'd have to say veal. But I also feel like it's not evil enough for our society. Like horse is evil.
Yeah.
Right? We're sort of, we know veal's bad, but we've given ourselves kind of a pass.
We have. But the horse is still, I know, yeah. The horse, it just, it didn't feel right. And by the way, for everyone listening, I didn't order, you know, a giant loin of horse. It was part of like a you know, carpaccio or just some sort of antipasta appetizer thing. So it was like my main course was I'll have the bone-in 12-ounce horse.
Horse just chops?
Put that out there. Yeah, there was no horse chops. No leg of horse.
That would take a long time to eat. Those legs are pretty big. I don't know if that's a pass. That's kind of like when Jimmy Swagger back in the day said, yeah, you cheated with that prostitute, but it was only the tip. I think it is after a certain point, the tip's enough.
The tip is enough, but Jimmy could have been worse. How about that?
Probably only about 4 inches worse. Hey-o! All right.
Well, there we go.
There we go. All right. So where are we here? So the wraps. Yeah, my take on the wraps is I'm really curious to see what happens with Pascal in the offseason. I know this is a bit tired, but you could see yesterday when he's on, he really is an exciting player to watch.
Yes.
And I can't tell whether it's a rehabilitation project for the team or a rehabilitation project for his trade value. Mm-hmm. Would they rather him work out or would they rather just fluff him up enough so that in the off season they can flip him and it becomes OG, Fred, and another star plus Nick Nurse that they try to get better again with? I can't decide even how I feel about it, because I've loved Pascal and he's been so shitty this year, not just on the court, but even just as a person. And the fight with Nick Nurse really soured a lot of people on him, and me included. But I also would like to give the guy a break because I think there's a lot going on and maybe all of us aren't always at our best. But then I think, yeah. Oh, Bradley Beal, OG and Fred.
Oh, I do that. I do that in a heartbeat.
I know it's not likely, but let's not kid ourselves. We would do that in a second. So are we really like we want to keep Pascal around or maybe just like them losing? Is it better to say, maybe for the overall welfare of the team, I have to want this bad thing. I have to eat the ortolan. I have to have the horse chops.
I love it. I love it. I'm even making sure to write down ortolan. I'm actually thinking of opening my opening thought with, many years ago, I once ate horse. I'm thinking of that as the opening line.
I couldn't do it. We were at the restaurant. What was it called? La Payette? What was it? La Palette. It was on Queen Street.
Yeah, La Palette.
And I went there to try it.
Yeah.
We were working on the show, or I don't remember what we were doing, but you did it. You know, you looked, you know, you were wearing linen. It was your thing. I went in there and I thought I was going to do it until it was time to speak. It's almost like the words froze in my mouth. I just couldn't do it.
That's fair.
I got steak and fries and in France.
Yeah.
Steak frit, which apparently is classy.
It's what? The worst.
Why is it when I go to the store and I buy a steak and I make some McCain super fries, it's a cry for help. But if I call it in French, I'm classy.
It's the worst. It's the whole French thing. It's one of the great con jobs that the French have done, where basically they found a way that eating French fries is cool and hip and it's not in your dorm.
It's so true. The steak isn't the issue. It's the French fries. It's because, like, I used to go to steak places with Landsberg, and he would always ask for ketchup on the side. Yep. And sometimes, depending on the place, they'd kind of look at him. You know, maybe not that classy. He was unrepentant. He just wanted ketchup with a steak. He didn't give a shit what anyone thought. But, you know, some of these places can be a bit snooty, but not about fries.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Again, it's our random morality-o-meter. What is good? What is bad? Veal is bad. We're okay with it. Horse, you, sir, should be in jail for 1,000 years. You know, same thing with the ketchup with steak.
Yeah. I hate to say it because of all the bullshit that I usually throw out here, but I kind of feel like I should be a vegan. And it feels sometimes like when I say it, it's like me saying I'm going to like the CFL. It's just another one of my empty promises. But I know I should do it. I know I should do it.
Yep. We all should do it, Bob. What if I just gave blood? What if I just started giving blood more?
You mean as a way to make good for all the things you don't do?
Well, my big thing is, Bob, is as someone who hasn't created life, that is the number one way, to hurt, for climate change. Your carbon footprint is never as big as when you create life. Well, I've never done that. I don't drive a lot. So even Steven, here comes the steak.
Okay. All right. Okay, Steven. All right. So do you want to move past the Raptors for an opening thought? And maybe go to either the Leafs or the Jays?
Jays, for the Jays who don't really know what it is, 3-4 through 7 games, the pitching's actually been fine. I know Tanner Roark wasn't great, but the defense made errors right before he gave up 2 home runs. I mean, to me, the only notable thing is only once in the first 7 games have they even managed 6 runs, and that was in a 6-2 win over the Rangers. That's really the only thing that I'm like, huh. I thought there'd be a couple of those 10-run games for the Jays.
Let me throw this out at you.
Yeah.
The difference between last night and the first game is the difference between who we want the Jays to be and who they are. Here's what I mean by that. The next step on the evolution of the Jays up the ladder isn't to beat the good teams. It's to win the games they should win. We were really excited when they looked so good against the Yankees, and they won a game that could easily have gone the other way. But if they didn't do great against the Yankees, in our guts, we kind of understand they're not the Yankees. The Yankees and the Dodgers are the two best teams in baseball, probably. If the Jays don't excel against them, that's okay. But last night's game, they should have won that. They snatched defeat out of the jaws of victory with just sloppy play. And that's the Jays. Like, that's the kind of team you don't want to watch. You don't want to watch a team that underperforms. And you don't want to watch a team that gives games away. That's frustrating. I would rather watch a bad team play hard than a good team play sloppy. So they've got to get to where the Raptors were for so long under Kyle and DeMar, which is amazing against the middle down. Not that great against the top up.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. And that sloppy play hurt them last year. And the 14, I think it was like 14 strikeouts. And what you just want to see is, are you doing all the professional things correctly? Which is different from, are you doing extraordinary? And the Jays, they've got some young bats that can be extraordinary. They've got Ryu who can be. But beyond that, they don't really have extraordinary. Not yet. They could. But what you want is more professional.
I feel like that's not exciting enough for your opening thought.
No. Baseball is not, unless I'm giggling at Houston getting off to a great start this year and rooting for the villain and all that. Baseball right now, there isn't anything with baseball for opening thought.
All right. So we can go off the board pop culture, or we can do Leafs next as I pitch you ideas.
We'll save the Leafs for a second because you wanted to go through a trio of movie trailers, all three of which I have watched.
Okay, great. Well, let's start with the Ghostbusters one. It wasn't a full trailer. It was more of a snippet, but it was Paul Rudd and the Stay Puft Marshmallows. And the Stay Puft Marshmallows come out of the bag in some supermarket, miscellaneous supermarket, and they do silly, fun, gremlin-y type things. What'd you think?
Well, that is attached to the original trailer they had from a year ago.
Right, but this is just what came out now. Like, that's not like some super Marvel 2.5-minute mini movie. It was really just a slice of what you could expect.
I loved it. I loved it because it was both comedic and then it got disturbing, where they're burning each other and they're eating each other and they're enjoying it. Like, they're the one that goes into the middle of a s'more, and it is like wrapping itself up for a nice bedtime sleep, but it's about to get burnt to death. So I liked it because it had that nice contrast.
There was one where the one marshmallow had skewered the other one with a pokey stick and was holding it over the element. And I thought, oh, okay, that's a bit of a twist. I am with you 100% on this one. I was so excited to see that. Because I think the real genius of the first Ghostbusters movie was that it was 95% kids movie, 5% little bit of edge.
Yeah, and you need that. Like, my concern was, it's like, oh, okay, they're doing the thing now where every movie is marketed to anyone who's 12 to 17, and they just don't care about anyone over the age of 30, which is something that really happened, I think, about 15, 20 years ago. It started to happen more, where the movie's going to be all about the kids. But then seeing the Paul Rudd and seeing that little dark part, I'm like, okay, because, you know, I don't want the movie where it's the diverse bunch of kids who get together and show that they can do anything. I want a part of that in the movie. I just don't want that to be 100% the movie. And I thought it had a good blend. And, you know, the cast overall looks good. Like, it overall looks like they're setting up a really good story.
Paul Rudd might be perfect for this.
Yes.
Because Paul Rudd just screams co-viewing. He's funny and sly enough for the adults, mm-hmm. but he's lovable enough for the kids.
Yeah, I want this to be a movie that a 12-year-old. Sorry, Bob. I want this to be a movie. I don't want, like, I'm sounding old man. I want this to be a movie that a 12-year-old can like, because when I was 12, I loved Ghostbusters.
So the magic age for this movie, I would say, is between 8 and 13. And here's what I mean by that. And I think that was probably true of Ghostbusters as well. But I was, like, in the younger camp when I saw it. So, you know, I was part of that. But here's what I mean by this. I was so glad you said I didn't want to see it be a certain kind of reboot. You know what I didn't want to see? I didn't want to see the gritty take on Ghostbusters.
Right.
You know, I didn't want this to be like the new Sabrina or Riverdale, where we're going to explore the fabric of this in a socioeconomic and teen sex kind of way. It's like, no. It's funny, you know, the Paul Feig reboot with Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig could have been amazing.
Yeah.
But the part that it was missing was what we got from the Paul Rudd trailer, which was just a little bit of wonder. It's like the reboot with all the women was about a reboot with women, and they lost the essence of what made Ghostbusters so great, which was that sense of, wow, you know, this is like fun and thrilling and kind of innocent and harmless. And I didn't get that from the reboot. And they could have been there because those actresses could have done it easily. But it's like they were too in love with the idea of the reboot to actually capture what Ghostbusters is all about, which is harmless fun.
Yeah. And it was disappointing because it's like, oh, wow, there's a lot of, you know, just a lot of talent. And at the time it came out, for me, Melissa McCarthy had the belt for the funniest right. human being in North America. Agreed. Like, she had Spy, with Heat, with before that Bridesmaids. I'm like, oh, Melissa's got the belt. Let's see what happens. And, you know, like a lot of movies, just didn't work.
Movies are really hard, like really, really, really hard. It's why so many amazingly talented people work so hard with so much money to create a bunch of stuff that's generally not that good. They're just really, really hard. When they come together, I'm not even sure you can plan for it. I think there's just an aspect of magic. Okay, so we both like the Ghostbusters one. What did you think? This is a bit late, but since we're doing trailers, what did you think of Black Widow and Loki?
Black Widow I thought was boring. It looked, you know, I mean, I'll still watch it, but it really felt paint by numbers. It feels like it's going to be Red Sparrow, but without any nudity.
Right. You know what it reminded me of?
Mm.
Garbage Time.
Yes.
It's like your team looks good in Garbage Time. It's really hard to get excited about that. The character's already dead. The MCU is not being evolved in any meaningful way. And the idea of a deep exploratory look at one of your key characters matters less when that character is dead.
Also, we've done the dark past thing. We sort of understand where this is going to go. And maybe we're wrong, but just the preview, it's certainly, here's the thing. The most exciting part of that preview was her and Hawkeye right before she dies in Endgame. Like, when they just showed parts from the other Avenger movies. That was the most exciting part.
What this really speaks to, and I think this goes to Loki as well, is the goal is to have characters that are interesting enough in service of the story. Tony Stark is a great character, but is he? Or is he just a fun character? Is it just a fun, great performance? Do we really care about Tony's pain? The genius of the Marvel movie, I thought, from the beginning, is that it implies actual human emotion and delivers mm-hmm. nonstop action.
But, yeah, no, you're right, Bob. And to add to that, the end of the biggest, giantest action movie of all time is a couple slowly just dancing, you know, like in the 1940s. That's how they ended it.
I think, and we can get to Loki from this, but what was really interesting about this was what TV for Disney and Marvel is going to deliver and what we got out of WandaVision and how lucky they were in a weird sort of way that WandaVision came before Falcon and Winter Soldier. And this is what I realize now about the Marvel Universe is the point of it is the Marvel Universe. We don't really care about the lives of the characters. We just want to know where's the big story going? How many surprises mm-hmm. can you tie into the trip to the big bad? You know, and WandaVision, the whole speculation around it, like it started off as this is a penetrating exploration of grief. And I think people thought for a second, oh my God, Marvel's going to do this differently. Oh, no, it's not. It's basically there to set up Doctor Strange. But I would rather try to figure out how they're going to set up Doctor Strange than just watch Bucky and Sam fight a guy.
I got to tell you, I'm trying on the Winter Soldier and Falcon. It's getting a high-end meh from me. I'm still going to watch it, but so far I'm like, eh.
What they learned in comics was the really big arcs did great, and the one-off issues, eh. You have to really love a character to watch a one-off issue. What is the implication for the Marvel Universe from this show? Well, I guess it could teach us who the new Captain America is going to be, but you know, the big bad doesn't feel like it's going to matter. Like, we spent so much time thinking, is it going to be Mephisto? Is it going to be Dormammu's buddies in the Neververse? You know, like, that's underpinned so much of what made WandaVision interesting for Marvel fans. And you kind of get that from Loki, too, don't you? Like, when you see the Loki thing, don't you think, ooh, this could be important?
Yes.
They're gonna set stuff up.
We'll get to Loki. One final thought on the whole Captain America thing.
Yeah.
If they're trying to keep hammering home the message of be careful about hero worship because then heroes get too much power and they abuse power, we've seen that in 17 other movies. Like them trying to keep hammering home the importance of the shield or the danger symbolically of the shield, that's like the 52nd 80s movie where the message is be yourself. She'll love you for you. We've got that message over and over again. Thanks. Instead of Captain America, I feel like I'm watching Captain Obvious. Boom.
Oh, see, all right. That could be an opening thought. Captain America? Question mark? Try Captain Obvious.
How long into that before Jeff McDonald sends an email to me and my producer just going, what are you doing?
Just send him back a quick note. We don't know if Taylor Hall's getting traded yet. What do you want from me? The Raptors are 3 games out of the play-in space. The Jays are 7 games into the season.
Yeah. So yes, Loki, first thought, I am thrilled to have my favorite version of Owen Wilson back. Like, I feel like I'm watching Bottle Rockets and some Wes Anderson, and I'm getting my Owen Wilson back. I'm thrilled.
So I want to throw something out here. Mm. When Roger Corman, do you know who Roger Corman is?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so if you don't and you're listening at home or in your car or wherever, Roger Corman was the master of the B movie. He created this studio and they made movies like The Toxic Avenger. And a lot of stars and directors wound up getting their start there. And they were super low budget and schlocky, very pulpy. And when Star Wars came out, Roger Corman was quoted as saying, oh, it's all over. Because they figured out how to take our B movies and put a production value into it.
Yep.
And that is going to take over the world. And he was right. And what I think Marvel has done now is they've taken those A production values and they've gone the next level. They've gone to A casting. The most important thing now isn't even the story, at least not at first. It's who's playing the characters. And Owen Wilson feels perfect, and so we're excited.
You know, when I first kind of thought that, the first, like, I forget, I think Iron Man came out before Avengers, when you had Robert Downey Jr. But more than that, when you had Gwyneth Paltrow, and listen, we can make fun of her for a lot of things, but she's a good actress. When she was playing Pepper Potts, it just, mm-hmm. everything felt a little more elevated having these higher end actors doing comic book. And you're right.
And Jeff Bridges was the bad guy.
Yeah. Yes.
So think back to that first Star Wars movie. Like, you had Carrie Fisher, who wasn't super well known, but Alec Guinness was Obi-Wan Kenobi. You know, Harrison Ford was a rising young star at the time. Now, Luke Skywalker was a bit of an unknown, and they wanted that on purpose. But I think having...
Alec Guinness. They had Alec Guinness one of the key roles.
Who's like one of the... Like, he wasn't even an actor. He was a thespian. And I think that also taught a lesson about how if you infuse serious people into these pulpy movies, like think about the X-Men and how everybody freaked out over Patrick Stewart being Professor X. We want these schlocky characters played by great actors.
Yeah.
You know, how much, and there's so much mystery into who's going to play this person. Like, you know, is John Krasinski going to be Captain America? Is Tatiana Maslany going to be the new She-Hulk? Like, you know, or is it going to be Stephanie Beatriz? Like, the dude from Letterkenny, will he be the new Wolverine? Like, this is the next level of fan service is casting.
John Krasinski as Captain America. I love it.
Yeah, he'd be good, eh?
He would
be
good.
Did you know, actually, that initially Black Widow was supposed to go to Emily Blunt, but she wasn't available? Mm. So it wound up going to Scarlett Johansson? Yeah. Don't you think she would have been better with Emily Blunt?
I think it's one of those cases, this is such a boring answer, in that both would work. Because Scarlett Johansson's done a good job. And usually when someone's done that role long enough, we can't imagine someone else doing it. But yes, I can imagine Emily Blunt doing it.
Scarlett Johansson, I think, is this generation's Winona Ryder. And by that, I mean, you watch her in one thing and you go, oh, she's really good. And you watch in another and you go, oh, that's really bad. And you have no idea if this person is good or bad at acting.
Yeah, she has that. She does. Like, when she works with Woody Allen, she's usually really good. In other stuff, meh, not so much.
Yeah, I don't even love her that much in Woody, but, you know. Okay, so
Loki. But overall, like, just the whole fixing of the time continuums and things like that, like, they've set up what looks like a really cool world. There's a lot of room for growth for Loki. So excited for it.
And it feels consequential. This is what I've realized that we want out of our Marvel stories, is we want consequence within the Marvel Cinematic Universe. For example, do you remember when Netflix first released the TV shows? And it was Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist, and then they eventually did the Defenders? One of the things that I think undid it was the feeling that this was its own little universe, and that it was never going to touch the real one, which was the Avengerverse.
Yeah.
And I think Daredevil was great. I love Daredevil. But we were never going to see Daredevil with the Avengers. And I think that that made it feel like minor league baseball.
Yeah, it's like a fun little novelty. Basically, it was the Mud Hens. The Mud Hens are fine for a Sunday because the tickets are cheaper. But I'm not buying season tickets to see the Mud Hens.
It's like going to see the Marlies if none of those players could be called up.
Yeah, it's like, oh, there's no Rasmus Sandin, Lilligren, or Nick Robertson. Enjoy, everybody.
God, I watched so many Marlies games over the years pretending to scout. So, yes, this is my takeaway from Loki versus Black Widow, is the difference between character development and consequence. And in the Marvel Universe, consequence wins every time. They blew it with Game of Thrones, because you could have done character development and offshoots with those characters because they were so well drawn. Like, wouldn't you have watched a show with Arya just to see Arya's adventures?
Yes.
Or you know, if Jaime hadn't have died, if he had broken and spun off, wouldn't you have watched Jaime Lannister's adventures in the world?
Oh, absolutely. Where Jaime's like, huh, you're hot, but are you my sister hot?
Oh my God.
Wait a minute. You call someone else dad who's not my dad? Someone's boner's going down. Okay, we'll get off of this. It's pretty dark. Hey, by the way, everybody, remember to please help us, who help sponsor our show. If you need a lawyer, like you are, say, getting in trouble for saying things, our lawyer's name is Jeff Pollock. He's a sponsor of the show. JeffPollock.com, 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088. That's Jeff with a G, JeffPollock.com. Small, incredibly effective law firm. They've helped us. They can help you.
All right. So let me quickly review your options here for an opening thought.
Yeah.
The Raptors are like eating horse chops.
Yep.
We've got baseball. The Jays need to learn to win the easy ones.
Yeah.
No, I'm just recapping.
Yeah.
And we've got
Red shirts versus green jackets, golf.
Oh, yeah, right. Thank you. I forgot that one. And then with trailers, Captain America, no, Captain Obvious.
Yes.
All right. So that brings us to our final entrant, which is the Leafs.
Okay, this is good. We're ending here, Bob, because I'm going to need your help. Because at 2:30 today, I'm having the most intimidating guest, Craig Button. Even when he agrees with you, he'll start yelling at you, and you start to cower. I've seen you and him go back and forth, and I hide behind the table. So I got Craig Button coming on, and my first question for him is, does winning put more or less pressure on Dubas to make a deal?
Whew. All right, not a bad first question. It's good to tap into, don't tap into his knowledge or you'll get crushed.
Yeah. Oh, no.
No, you're just going to get crushed anyway. Like, the thing about Craig is he just goes in and, you know, he knows so much and he's so good at it that it'll go the way he wants it to go.
Yeah.
He really calls out stupidity, too. It's funny. I can actually tell you, all these things. Like, McKenzie used to tolerate it.
Yes.
with a kind of a world-weary sigh.
Yeah.
Dreger would get indignant around stupidity, and Button attacks it.
Yeah, but Button attacks everything. Even when he agrees with you, 30 seconds in, you're like, wait a minute. Why is he getting angry at me? And he's agreeing with me. What's going on?
He's the best. He's really love good. I love Craig. Okay, so how about this? Okay, so does winning increase the pressure to do it or not do it? Maybe, how about this for a question? How much should the Leafs be worried about the chemistry of the room at this point versus just trying to add new bodies?
Mm-hmm. Because the chemistry is at an all-time high right now with Jack Campbell.
And we haven't seen a team that, you know, we talked about the Jays not winning the games that they should win. It feels like in years past, the Leafs found ways to lose close games. And this year they find ways to win close games. And God, that's exciting. And a nice change of pace. I have a metaphor for the Jays, but we can get to that in a bit. Do you want to just ask him if he was in Dubas' shoes, what would be his priority?
Yeah.
That's boring, isn't it?
I mean, we know what it's going to be. It's going to be most likely goalie first, because we don't know the health of Freddie Anderson, or a close second, or they might flop a forward versatile enough to be in the third line, but can help soup up the second line. That's going to be the answer.
I'm glad you used the word soup. I got a bone to pick with the Leafs right now. They got two guys who have soup as their nickname. That's too much.
That is true.
Campbell Soup and Ilya Mikheyev, the soup man. No. Soup's the kind of thing, it's got to be one guy's thing.
Well, Mikheyev shouldn't have it anymore. My analogy for Mikheyev, Ilya Mikheyev on a breakaway is like a 15-year-old first time he gets to make out with a girl, and he's fumbling around with that bra. Everything seems exciting, but it's going to end disappointing because he doesn't know what to do. That's Mikheyev on a breakaway with a puck.
That is a very visual, very yes. visual. Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, I'm so over Mikheyev, and I'm over Leafs Twitter with their defending of everybody.
Yeah.
And Raptors Twitter is the worst for defending everybody, by the way, if we had to rank them.
Yeah.
Like Malachi Flynn, you would think was Jason Kidd, the way they talk about his potential.
Yeah.
Okay, but back to the Leafs. All right, so how about this? I'm going to give you my image.
Yep.
Talent on a team is like the stack in poker. You can't win if you've got a low stack. You can play right all you want, but in the end, the odds are just against you if you got a small stack of chips. It helps to have the big stack of chips. However, the big stack of chips, which is sort of like the requisite for being competitive, can't save you if you don't play right.
Yeah.
And the Leafs have spent all their time over the last few years building up that stack of chips. But now, what they've had to do the hard way is realize that you got to lose a little bit. You got to work on your psychological game. You got to know when to fold them. You got to learn how to play. And they have learned how to play, and they still got the stack. And that's why they should go after Taylor Hall. because in the end, you didn't work this hard to get here to not do it. And sometimes you got to give up a bit of the stack to get more later.
That's what it feels like, because this is a mentally just, they're checking more of the boxes of what you want to see. If you go through every 10 game stretch, the worst was one point they were 5-5, but then they follow it up by being like 7-2-1. You know, they're doing it. They've only had really maybe two. They've had two dumb losses all year. Both came against Ottawa. You know, like they've checked every box.
I love that win against Montreal the other night. Mm-hmm. That's the team that I feel could really do great in the playoffs. I mean, there was the weird news about Nylander, and there was the fact that you had your backup goalie, who actually looks great and feels like your number one goalie now, and the Stars looked really good. And, you know, Montreal had some pushback for sure, but it feels like in years past they would have lost that Montreal game because there was just enough off to have an off night.
Yeah.
But it's like they decided, they're going to win.
It didn't happen.
It didn't happen. Like, they're ready to go. How about this for Craig? Go back to his years in the league. What are the signs that you see as a GM that your team is ready to win? Both both on and off the ice. What are the signs that give you the confidence that this team's actually ready for it?
Yeah.
It's not really an opening thought, though, is it?
No. Well, the thing is, I think the opening thought, really the Raptors one is the juiciest. I mean, it's, and I've said this about the Leafs this year as a compliment. The Leafs in a lot of ways are boring. We're not having concerns. Like every now and then there's a little Nylander flare up, but we're not having concerns about the defense. We're not having concerns about Matthews or Marner. Yep. Freddie hasn't been great, but Campbell has been spectacular. And even Hutchison has been more than good enough. So the Leafs, this is the most boring they've been in ages, which is a tip of the cap to them.
Although I would say they have big problems waiting to happen, but they're not happening yet. And maybe they won't.
Yeah, their big problem is Freddie Anderson.
In years past, there hasn't been much to talk about, or the things that have been big to talk about have all been negative, like, you know, Salutegate and all that crapola.
Yeah.
But we used to obsess over things like, well, Travis Dermott, what are we going to do with him? And what, you know, the expansion draft's coming, and you would do like 3 hours on radio about what's the future of Travis Dermott? Because what were you going to talk about? They're not a playoff team, and they're the only thing that everybody wants to listen to. So I remember one time Cebulski and I doing a thing on Mike Brown. Mike Brown's returning to the lineup, and that's going to fire up that fourth line. And halfway through it, I thought, I hate myself. This is stupid.
Oh my God. Ugh. Like in the middle of it, you're like, I'm talking right now and I'm bored. I'm boring myself with the syllables coming out of my boring lips.
We are into minute 5 on what Mike Brown could bring to the lineup.
And then are you going to then go into Connor Brown conversation after that?
So many Connor Brown conversations. So yeah, your point is well taken. They're really well constructed. They're a genuine contender. I've said, and I stick to the idea that the goaltending might be the biggest problem they faced in 20 years, but maybe it isn't. Like,
that's the thing, but maybe it isn't. That there's nothing. We're not shitting on the coach, not shitting on the GM, the most of the star players. I mean, there's been up and down from Tavares and with Nylander, but every team has that. There just hasn't been the big issue. And the problem with Freddie, we can't properly yell at him because he's been injured.
Okay, so we like the sound of the Masters one, but it's not a great question. We like the Raps one. I feel like you're going with the Raps. The Jays one, hard to get excited about the Jays 7 games in. Trailer Madness is going to get you fired by Jeff McDonald for not talking about sports. And the Leafs don't really have a great opening thought, but you're going to do a good segment with Craig.
That's it.
All right. Well, this brings me to my last one, infusers. You know those things that like put the steam into the air?
Mm-hmm.
And you can get like little potions and they'll make the steam smell good.
Yeah.
I didn't know this about myself, but I love infusers.
Really?
It's not really my nature, but I've got one going right now with pine scent.
Do you have a ranking for what you like most and least?
I like grapefruit. I like pine scent. I like the grapefruit because it gives the room a little bit of a lift, a kind of a citrusy optimism. But here's my question for you. What is your favorite needless decadent household item?
Why do you ask this? Because you know where I'm going to go.
Well, it could be
you waffle iron. You know where I'm going to go.
Could be waffle iron.
I don't have a waffle iron. A waffle iron to me is very aspirational because that means I'm going to be, you know, spending the time always whipping up the batter. And that's not who I am. In the end, Bob, it's my duck shaped or the duck form decanter.
But I feel like that's more of a, well, it is pretty fancy. Does it matter that it's duck shaped or is that just for aesthetics?
And it doesn't look like a duck, but sort of shaped like it. And it's just, it's the really nice, classy one. Like, as you know, Bob, like most people, I have more than one decanters. I got my weekday decanter. Amy and I, you know, used it the other night watching Promising Young Woman. And then come the weekend, it's the fancy decanter. It's Saturday decanter, which is different than Wednesday decanter.
Why?
It's just you put the fancier wine in the fancier decanter. It's all for show. Let's face it. It's all pomp and circumstance.
Wait a minute. You've got a weekend decanter?
Yeah.
And it's just there for you guys?
Well, I mean, if someone is over and it's like a nice dinner and we're opening up a nicer bottle of wine, then yeah, then you bring out that decanter.
Okay. You got to the heart of the matter here. And one of my least favorite words in the entire English language, when people apply the word nice to stuff, I'm putting on my nice pants.
Yeah.
I'm having a nice bottle of wine. Yeah. It is the snootiest thing in the world. People who use the word nice are in that context are always snooty. They're the ones who got changed out of their school clothes to have their home clothes when they were kids. I've got my playground clothes and I've got my home clothes and my school clothes, as opposed to the rest of us who basically like fell in a pile of shit and went everywhere with it.
Well, if it makes you feel better, I don't have any of those things. I wear the same clothes all day. I don't even change into pajama pants. But but yes, I have different decanters. I will use the word, you know, nice. But as Bob, I don't know if you know this, the description of this podcast, it's going to be me saying, forget Captain America, more Captain Obvious. But it's also Bob saying, I didn't know this about myself, but I like infusers.
Well, I didn't know that about myself. I think everybody is not surprised to hear that you have different decanters for different moods.
Yes.
People might be surprised to find out that I love grapefruit infuser steam. Maybe not.
No. That is 100% true. That for you is going to be a revelation. What I said is just an annoyance. That's the difference.
So let's recap. Where are you going with this? Like, if this was love it or list it, this is where we find out whether the couple is going to stay or move. Come on, Matt. What are you going with? What's your opening thought?
Opening thought is going to be, and I'm just going to ask my producer and just make sure it's okay. I want to start my opening thought with, I once ate horse.
It's a good opening.
It is. It gets attention right away.
It really does.
And let's face it. It's basically an entry point where 30% of my opening thought is not sports. It's just going to be jokes about, listen, I didn't order the 12-ounce bone-in horse. You know, I didn't order the Secretariat special. You know, like it allows me to have some fun.
Which I know is something you measure very carefully. You don't want to go too far.
Yeah, small tablespoons. Oh, no. So, yeah. I'm basically, please, sir, can I have another bowl of fun?
You know what? It's funny. You look at it as it's an opportunity to tell jokes. I think it's a way for you to turn Raptors talk into something about you.
Why can't it be both?
Well, it will be. I've done a lot of shows with you. It will be.
No, that'll be 205
High Water.
Oh yeah. Oh, really good movie.
I know you love it. All right. Well, then I'm happy that we started off with confusion. And we've ended with clarity.
There you go. Love it.
All right. Well, then I guess I'll see you on Tuesday. We'll react to whatever happens on the trade deadline. And there you go.
That works for me, Bob. Enjoy your pine nut grapefruit scented home. I will talk to you soon. Bye, Bob. Ch-ch-ka.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.